Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And
that's
why I taught myself how to draw was actually The Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it
sticks. This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, the road to creativity. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for being here. Just a couple of months ago, I was at the Austin Revolution Film Festival and had a terrific time. My short screenplay, Minus One Plus, was nominated for Best Sci-Fi Short Screenplay, and it wound up winning. So I was very, very happy. The whole time that I was there was just a win all around anyway, because I got to do everything that I wanted to do. I wanted to network. I wanted to meet new people. I wanted to see some great stuff. And I also wanted to have some of them on this show. Several different filmmakers got to talk about the different works that they had at that festival. And one of them is my guest this week. Michael Chiron was one of the filmmakers present at the Austin Revolution Film Festival. He was able to present a short called The Time Capsule, which was so much fun, so funny, and was a great way to kind of start the block of films. And it was great to meet Michael and get to hear a little bit more about his journey as a filmmaker. He's already hard at work on his next project, which is a comedy short called It's Hard Not to Be Romantic About Time Travel. Yeah. And this is a comedy short and proof of concept for a possible feature film. And I am thrilled to say that Michael is here to tell us all about this. So without further ado, let me please introduce my guest for this week, Michael Chiron. Michael, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for being here. And before we dive into your own story as a filmmaker, let's talk about the project that you're working on right now. It's Hard Not to Be Romantic About Time Travel. That's a really fun title right there. So
it took me a while to get it down, too. I stumbled on it for a while.
It kind of works as a 1-2 punch with The Time Capsule.
I have two films in a row with time in the title, yeah.
But at the same time, like it's almost like you're handling it in different ways, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about this particular short.
So it was a short, as I was telling someone the other day, I may have been a little high and thought up an idea and wrote it down. It's the first time I did that, and the next day read it and went, oh, I kind of like this idea. And it was like, it was something I came up with. I was thinking about the concept of romantic time travel, right? You know, the pinnacle of that being, I feel, being Somewhere in Time, right? A film where he time travels through love, right? And there's things like that. There's Outlander. There's other like non-science-based things like 13 going on 30, where it's like wishing dust and she time travels into her body, right? And using this like no science, right? And they're usually love stories, right? It's romance a lot of the time. I wanted to kind of take that. One of my things as a writer is I love taking existing tropes, taking existing ideas and finding a different way to tell it, right? That's what really excites me, right? And so it was the idea of taking this and both actually making a romantic time travel movie where there is a romance, like the feature version, I haven't written it all out, but I've plotted it all out, it becomes a romantic comedy in and of itself, but it's also making fun of it and self-referential of it. And it has some really ridiculous elements. I'm describing it as Pineapple Express meets Somewhere in Time. And so very, very absurd moments, but also some very poignant things. It's the story. The short is I write features. That's what I really love writing. And I write a short just to make something. Right. This is the first time I've had an idea for a feature that I felt like could be a proof of concept. It's a very short, just establishing who the characters are, what the world is like, and what the stakes are in 15-ish minutes or less, right? And showing like, this is what I want to build. And it's a story of a guy who just got out of prison. He was there for 5 years, and it was for a crime he knows he did not commit, but there was evidence against him. And he gets out and he's hanging out with his best friend and they're getting high. And his friend's like, well, what if we could go back and find the real person who does it? And he's like, yeah, right. How? And he's like, well, let me show you. And he shows him, he's mapped out through watching the movie Somewhere in Time. His buddy is like a huge stoner that like it actually is a roadmap to time travel. So they, you know, you have to be in love with someone. You have to be in the place where they existed and know when they were. And so he's mapped out the girl who lived in his house 5 years before the night of the robbery. and got his bud tender to make special gummies that induce feelings of love so that he could time travel. And so they time travel using weed back to 5 years before.
That's awesome.
That's the basis of the short. And it like leaves a bunch of cliffhangers of like, hey, this is what's going to happen mm-hmm. for the future.
So it kind of sounds like the way that you set that up was a way that it almost kind of shuts down that sort of feeling of those that feel like there needs to be like some sort of scientific justification right. for time travel. And it's kind of like you immediately just shut that down with
yeah.
this.
Yeah. Yeah. He's very adamant. He's mapped it out that in the feature version, I have this whole concept that he's been on Reddit threads where people have been talking about time travel and some people have figured out that it's this and then they disappear and no one ever hears from them again. And so he's convinced that it is real and it is this map. And you find out this, there's a whole thing to that the world for the future that I'm really excited about. But again, the whole thing for me is that it is about the power of love. They travel through love, right? Is how they mm-hmm. get through there. And there is, you know, without it is, I mean, hopefully one day people will see a feature of it, but the big moment is, you know, they've been time traveling through this one guy using the weed, but like they get separated from this girl that they meet at the beginning that the main character does fall in love with. And he has to actually use his love for her to get to her. Right. So oh, it's cool. like, okay. and he has to, you know, to get to where he was, he has to actually, he's the one who does rob the bank that he's convicted of robbing because it's a whole time travel thing. Cause he has to choose that to choose to be with her. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it is about the power of love overcoming regret and anger and all of these things that he's dealing with.
I love that you said the power of love because that leads right into like another time yes. travel iconic story that everyone knows.
Yeah, we made that reference in our Seed and Spark video a couple of times. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. So it sounds like a whole lot of fun and it sounds like something that those who are into time travel stories would definitely find a lot, not only to enjoy, but also just a lot to catch references for.
Yeah.
So that sounds like a lot of fun. And so I'm curious to know like what your story in general, like when it comes to filmmaking, one of the things that I love to hear about is people's own road to creativity. When they finally get on that highway and realize that where they're going is exactly what they want to do. It's what they want to be in life. So what was it about filmmaking in general that really kind of got you in that vibe in the first place?
I mean, how far do you want to go back, right? Like this is it's a long story. I mean, I grew up in a small town in East Texas and yeah. I was always gifted at writing and I was always a storyteller, but it was never like you can make movies or you could write. Like it was just kind of like, oh, you go to college and you get the degree you're supposed to get. And it, you know, when I was in high school, you know, I was in bands, but I was always also in like a small town religious community. So it was like, oh, you play music. Oh, well then you'll play in the church or whatever. It was never considered like you can be a creative, right? But when I was a little kid, I remember just being obsessed with movies, reading novelizations of movies when I was like 8. One of my favorite books I found. And when I was, I guess, I remember, was it 1990 when it came out? So I was like 11, somewhere around there. The Robin Hood Prince of Thieves movie. And I
got the novelization, right?
No, well, I had that too. But I got a book about the making of and just being obsessed with that and reading through and seeing pictures of stuff. But it was never like, oh, this, you're a little boy from Athens, Texas. You could make a movie. It was like, you know, that's what the people in the far off lands of Hollywood do, right? And so when I went away to college, I was in bands and I played music. But I started discovering indie film, right? I graduated high school in 97. Mm-hmm. When I got into college, I discovered Kevin Smith. I adore, you know, Wes Anderson's early works, but especially Bottle Rocket, where he just went and did it, really blew me away, right?
Yeah.
And you start going like, oh, you can make a movie, right? Like it's become mm-hmm. something that's like, oh, you can do, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't remember if you met my friend Eric, but he was one of the actors in The Time Capsule. And he and I were in a band together in college. That's where we met. I moved to Austin after I graduated college. And we just, for a year on weekends, shot a feature script that I wrote.
Wow.
And at the end of finishing it, I said, this is bad. Let's move on. And so that was in 2001, from 2001 to 2002.
Yeah.
And then actually in 2021, I found those tapes and edited it together. And we did actually shoot every scene. And it was very bad. And the only people who have seen it are the people that were involved in it.
Yeah.
But like, that was kind of my film school. I was like learning, like we learned, you could tell which scenes we shot later than the scenes we shot earlier. Right. Cause I mm-hmm. learned how to do things better. And then it's just been, you know, I was in bands and stuff off and on and really have been focused on filmmaking a series of shorts since 2017. We've done about a short a year. And just like, I was doing stuff in between there, but it wasn't like really pushing festivals and going out there and meeting other filmmakers and pushing to see what we could do to get our films out there has really been my focus since 2017.
Yeah, that sounds great. And that first one, the one that you kind of dubbed your film school, yeah. is that a project that you think that after, you know, like after a while, it may be something worth revisiting and kind of redoing?
Oh, no. No.
That's in the past. It should stay in the past kind of thing.
I wrote it. It was the second screenplay I ever wrote. In college, I was one of the guys I was in band with, the singer of the band, and I wrote a screenplay, the first screenplay I ever wrote, because Project Greenlight came out. And we were the first season of that, we're like, let's just write a movie. And we wrote it. I still have that script. It's also bad. And then I went and wrote the one that we shot just so I actually wrote it as something cheap that I could make, right? I knew I could just do for free and with friends. And I mean, it's very heavily, I wanted to be Kevin Smith, right? Like it's very heavily that, right? It's like, it's not something I would ever revisit.
Gotcha. Yeah. But it served its purpose. Got you behind the camera. It got you that sort of experience. And I think Kevin was also kind of saying the same thing about Clerks until it wound up getting picked up. And then just think of this as what you would have done in film school, but don't sell out on it. Right. Take another shot at it. So that's great that you were able to do that. I hate to ask, was there a lot of money that was invested in that?
I bought a consumer grade mini DV cam, right?
Oh, nice.
And we just shot on weekends with friends, right? We found free locations. There was no money in that. Then in late 2003, and then we did pickups in early 2004, shoot a feature that I did put money in. My grandparents passed away and I inherited some money and I wasted it all on a basketball comedy that has some really funny moments. It was pre-internet for movies, right? And so like there was nowhere to distribute it. The DVD distributors, I had people tell me, oh, I think it's really hilarious, but it's a comedy and it has no names and it has no nudity, so we don't know how to sell it. And I was like, yeah, that's fair. I didn't think that through. There was no way to do anything with it at that time. Now, if someone did that now, you could distribute it yourself.
And then there's also, like all the other streaming platforms that are out there.
You just put it out there and just get it to wherever.
So having done this now, you've been working on different films, different shorts and everything, different scripts. Now with all this experience that you have in there, what are some of the things that people who may want to kind of follow in your footsteps don't really think about?
I mean, one, it's like I tell people all the time who say, like, what should I do to start, right? And I always tell someone, be okay with your first project not being good, right? Mm-hmm. Something you should learn from. Like I said, I shot that feature over a year. Like it was really about 14 or 15 months of weekends. It wasn't every weekend, but it was every weekend we could get free. Right. And I finished it and said, I looked at tapes and said, this is bad, and moved on. And I learned a lot from it. And some people, you meet those people and you see a film that blows you away. And they're like, yeah, it's the first thing I ever made. Those people exist. I don't know how. But like, for most of us, you're going to make something and you should be able to take something from it and move on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's a big thing to not put all your hopes into, I'm going to make this film and it's going to be perfect. And do your best. Right. But like, don't expect it to be Sundance worthy, the first film you make. Right.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I'm sure that you've experienced quite a bit is issues with funding. What are some of the different things you've learned when it comes to funding all these different projects?
A couple things. So, I mean, partly this series of shorts that I've done over the last, 8 years, have been very cheap because I have an amazing crew of people. My cinematographer and editor, Steven Gunter, and I have been friends since we were 10 years old. I met him in the fifth grade. He was drawing Ninja Turtles, and I was like, that guy is cool. I need to know someone who draws Ninja Turtles, and we've been friends ever since. We were in bands together.
Nice.
He has just a beautiful eye for shooting things, right? I make silly movies, and he elevates them by making them look cinematic, right?
Yeah.
And then, my friend who does all of my post audio, score, Foley, all that stuff, I met him in like sixth grade. And really, our senior year of high school, we were in a band together and became really great friends, right? And he's one of my favorite people in the world. He's extremely talented. And so having those guys, and we just love working together, makes it easier for me. And I acknowledge that it's harder for other people to do that if you're just a writer director, because you got to hire those guys. And these guys work for me because they love working together. I also have an amazing crew of actors, Alicia Rivera, who produces with me, and we've now done four films together that she's acted in, and this will be her fifth. but she's produced the last three. This will be the fourth one she's producing.
No kidding.
Like wow. Having her involved, Eric Anderson, who I talked about when I was in college, I met him and we were in bands together. He has been in almost everything I've made. There's a couple things, small things that he was not in, but he always has some, sometimes he's been the lead. Sometimes he's been a small part, right? He's going to be a small part in It's Hard Not to Be Romantic About Time Travel, but he's been the lead in multiple things. And he also helps produce. He helps me find locations. And so it's having that crew of people who just really love working together is what you've got to find. And I know it's not easy, but if you find those people, you want to stick to them. Cause I've also had really bad experiences with people. And that's the other thing I'd say about funding is, you know, be careful about who you get in bed with. Cause I had a guy 15 years ago who produced two features that I co-wrote and directed who just literally went crazy. He also produced a feature for another person and he tried to sue me for 5 years over them. And every time we went to court, the judge was like, why is this here? And I was like, I don't know. And finally got thrown out and he's like a Trumper walking around with guns and stuff now. And this is a person who we were like buddies at one point. So I was just like, oh yeah, I'll just trust this guy. And there was not a lot of legal documents involved, definitely. And so I don't own those films and never got to do anything with them. And so
that's a shame.
That's the main thing is just be careful who you trust, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But it sounds like what you have is something truly valuable. You have your crew, you have your cast, you have a producer that loves working with you, enjoys working with you. And you know, that's got to just make the whole experience all the more better.
Oh yeah. It's fun on set because we all like working together, right?
Oh yeah. And speaking of working together, one of the things that you were able to do is take this project that you're all working together on and get it up on Seed and Spark.
Yes.
Now, what was your experience? How has it been working with a site like that?
It's been good so far. So this is the first time I've used Seed and Spark. Mm-hmm. They do a really good job of you have to submit your profile to them and then they give you feedback about like, oh, maybe you should change this. This could be more helpful if you did this. And some of the feedback I was like, yeah, I get that, but that's not for me. And some of it I was like, yo, that's a good idea. And I went back and changed it. Right. And so that really, I think, was helpful. I think they're a little more focused on just film. And so it makes it hopefully a place that people see it more than getting lost in an Indiegogo or Kickstarter that does all kinds of things, right? Mm-hmm. But we'll see. I mean, so far we're not quite halfway through and we're at 40%, right? So the first week and the last week are the big weeks. We were huge our first week, very small second week. And so we're just kind of trying to push it along to get to the end.
Fantastic. And just like with platforms like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, there are different incentives right there. What are the incentives that you have for this one?
So, you know, there's the basic shot. The cheapest one is to get a shout out on social media. Then you get a chance to watch the film once it's finished. We'll have a link to stream it for a certain amount of time. There is a bigger donation that gets you a special thanks in the credits, as well as we'll send you a link to our last seven films, right, that I've made. Wow. And then it starts getting into some more like, hey, you can come to our cast and crew party, right? Obviously, if you're not in Austin, you have to pay for your own travel and everything, but you can be there for that. You can be involved in the movie. We have some featured extra spots, all the way up to a level where you can give to, I'll consult on your script. I'll give you feedback on your script or on your production notes or on festival strategies, things like that, that I have a lot of experience in. I have already have someone who's bought that and wants me to read a script. He's almost finished. Right. And I was like, cool, you know, and then, you know, production, you be an associate producer or a producer on the project.
That's great. And that's a really good variety of different things that people can get involved in. And so it really kind of caters to all different types of people with different financial situations. So that's terrific.
And that's the thing too. I just want to say that like a lot of people, I think, see that like our goal is 8,000, right? I mean, we really love to get to 10,000 so we can pay for festival submissions, but really we set it at 8,000 because you got to get to the 80%, and the 80% is our minimum to make the film. Right. So we're hoping to get to at least the 8,000 or more, but you see that number and you go, oh, that's a lot. I can't pay that. And no one's asking anyone to give 8,000. I'm not even asking. We've had people give large amounts and I'm not even asking for that. If a bunch of people all gave the $15 or the $25, we'd get there too.
Yeah.
So a small amount helps just as much if people start giving on that one.
Absolutely. And I hope that winds up being the case for this. Cause I, for me, just as, you know, in a selfish way, I was like, I just want to see this. I want to see this play out. I think it's going to be a lot of fun because I've already seen the time capsule and I already know that like that I definitely want to see more of your work. So I'm excited for this. I'm excited for the work that you have ahead of you. I think that it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a real great experience. And where can my listeners find you on social media?
So on Instagram, Rogue Alchemy Pictures is where I do everything. I think I have a Facebook for Rogue Alchemy Pictures, but I just send it through my personal one there. I don't really even use that. I send everything from Instagram to other places, right? So Instagram is really the main place where I post it. You can also find through the link in my bio on Instagram, my website that has some of the older films on it. And I keep, you know, post updates there. The link to The Seed and Spark is also through my Instagram bio.
Fantastic. And I'm going to have the link to The Seed and Spark in this show, in the show notes for this week. So okay. I'm so excited for Michael. I'm so excited for his cast, his crew, for everyone that's working with him. And I'm excited for all of you wonderful indie filmmakers, all the people that I met at Austin Revolution, all the people that I hope to meet in future festivals and beyond. I believe that this is the time for you to work with people that you trust, get those wonderful crews together that are doing this for the love of film, that are doing it for the love of storytelling, and get these projects out there. Because I've said this many times, in these crazy times, we need your voices, we need your stories now more than ever. So I give all the best of luck to Michael and the rest of his cast and crew. And for all of you who are working on your own projects, I give you all my love, support, and my enthusiasm. And I just want to see all of you succeed. So for Michael Sharon, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. And I will see you next week.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to hesgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to george@hesgotit.com.